Crusade Channel News. News you can trust because the truth can be trusted. From the Crusade Channel News Desk, here's Celeste Youngblood.
Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Youngblood, coming to you from the Veritas Radio Network News Bureau with your headlines at this hour on this Tuesday, November 28th, 2017. A massive search is on for a 3-year-old North Carolina girl. Then I'll have your stock market report and saint of the day. The VA continues to fail veterans, and Kenya's new president was inaugurated today amid national unease. ABC News reports that the FBI has joined in a massive search for 3-year-old Mariah Woods from Jacksonville, North Carolina, who went missing after being put to bed on Sunday night.
In North Carolina for a 3-year-old who disappeared in the middle of the night. ABC's Steve Osunsami has that story.
The FBI is now working with North Carolina authorities searching for this 3-year-old girl who disappeared from her bed early Monday morning.
I love her. I'll do anything. Just bring her home, please, safe and sound. She's my baby. She's my everything.
The mother of 3-year-old Mariah Woods says her boyfriend last saw her daughter around midnight in their mobile home when the girl woke up and he told her to go back to sleep. When the child's grandmother went to wake her up in the morning at 6:45, she was nowhere to be found. The search has centered around their home and the nearby woods. Helicopters, sheriff's deputies, and firefighters have joined in the search. The state is running an Amber Alert this morning. The girl's mother is praying that whoever may have taken her little girl will bring her back safely.
Just to be able to touch her and hold her and not let her go again, I'd give anything.
Authorities are now asking families in the area to search their yards and their sheds. Part of the search area is on Camp Lejeune, and the base is now helping with the search. Robin?
Hope she's found safe and sound.
Woods is a white female with brown hair and blue eyes, about 2 feet 9 inches tall and weighs 30 pounds. Let us ask St. Anthony of Padua to intercede for little Mariah Woods. And now it's time for your business and market report. Monsanto scored a victory in Europe yesterday when the EU approved the use of their controversial weed killer, glyphosate, found in Roundup. Sonia Legg reports for Reuters.
Protesters hoped they'd convince EU countries not to renew the license of a controversial weed killer. But their tug of war outside the European Commission failed to sway those voting inside. There was heated debate over whether the key ingredient of Monsanto's top-selling Roundup causes cancer. But in the end, 18 countries approved the use of glyphosate for another 5 years.
Overall, there is like a major scientific and medical issue is that not only there is like amazing evidence about the impact on the environment, but also we are growingly seeing like a huge body of evidence, independent evidence, linking glyphosate with cancer.
The chemical's been used by farmers for more than 40 years. Its safety was cast in doubt in 2015, when a World Health Organization agency concluded it probably causes cancer. Then in March this year, the European Chemicals Agency released a study which showed no links to the disease in humans. Many farmers were against a ban, saying the economic cost of controlling weeds without the chemical would be too great. But 9 countries did vote against the renewal. This may not be the last protest about its use.
Now, here is Reuters' Fred Katayama giving us the rundown of the market's performance yesterday.
Investors went shopping for stocks on Cyber Monday, picking up consumer cyclicals and telecom shares. But falling energy stocks pulled down the S&P 500 just below break-even. Exponential ETF CEO Phil Bock.
Retail fuels a lot of the economy, and we are still bullish on the market right now. Based on all the indicators we have, the market is expensive. There's no doubt about it. But we're not market timers. We're looking for the long term, and we see with strong consumer numbers, we think the rally can indeed continue for a bit longer.
Among the most actively traded stocks, Time Inc., the publisher of magazines like Time, Fortune, and People, is being bought for $1.8 billion by the publisher of Better Homes and Gardens, Meredith. Both stocks zoomed higher. A strong start to the holiday shopping season starting Black Friday boosted shares of Urban Outfitters and Amazon.com. Walmart is in striking distance of matching Amazon's online prices for the first time. Adobe Analytics says Cyber Monday will add $6.6 billion in online sales. Energy shares like Chevron and Hess fell as oil prices slipped. Investors took profit on high-flying housing stocks. Sales of new homes unexpectedly rose in October to a 10-year high. In Europe, a broad pullback led by energy and material stocks dragged the markets lower.
Now let's see how the market is shaping up today. Yesterday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed up 23 points and as of right now is up 181 points at 23,763. The NASDAQ yesterday closed down 11 points and as of right now is up 23 points at 6,902. The S&P 500 yesterday closed down 1 point and as of right now is up 19 points at 2,620. Crude oil is down 12 cents at $57.99 a barrel. And in the world markets, the Japanese Nikkei closed down 10 points and the Hong Kong Hang Seng closed down 5. The London FTSE 100 closed up 78 and the DAX in Germany closed up 60. Today's quote of the day is from St. Catherine Laboureille. I knew nothing, I was nothing. For this reason, God picked me out. Coming up next after the break in Lives of the Saints and Martyrs, we honor St. Catherine Laboureille. You're listening to Crusade News.
Hey folks, have you ever heard the old adage, you need to wake up and smell the coffee? Well, it's true, and I'm here to ask you to make sure the coffee you wake up to and smell is the Crusade Channel's very own gourmet blend, Crusade Capuchin Dark Roast. Our coffee is custom roasted from the finest fair trade coffee beans and is bagged for us by the Heavenly Roast Coffee Company. Order your supply of Crusade Capuchin Dark Roast today by browsing to mikechurch.com/coffee. And don't forget the Crusade Channel coffee mugs. Place your order for delicious gourmet Crusade Channel coffee today. Today at mikechurch.com/coffee or call 844-5-CRUSADE.
Catherine was born in Côte d'Or, France in 1806, the ninth of 11 children and daughter of a farmer. When she was nine, her mother died, and it is said after the funeral, she picked up a statue of the Virgin Mary, kissed it, and said, "Now you will be my mother," referring, of course, to the one whom the statue represented, not the statue itself. She was raised by her maternal aunt, was very devout, and was blessed with visions and intuitive insights. A dream led her to join St. Vincent de Paul's Daughters of Charity. Sister Catherine Laboureille was stationed at the Vincentian community on Rue de Bac in Paris, and while there experienced a series of apparitions culminating in one of the Blessed Virgin Mary, in which she was shown the Blessed Mother inside an oval frame with the words, "O Mary, conceived without sin, pray for us who have recourse to thee." On the reverse side of the frame was a circle of 12 stars, the letter M surmounted by a cross, and the Sacred Heart of Jesus and Immaculate Heart of Mary. Sister Catherine was directed to take these images to her confessor and tell him that medallions should be struck. We now call this the Miraculous Medal. Sister Catherine spent the next 40 years caring for the sick and elderly until she passed away on December 31, 1876, at 70 years of age. Her body remains incorrupt at the Chapel of Our Lady of the Miraculous Medal on Rue de Bac. St. Catherine Laboureille, pray for us. Fox News is reporting that the VA has failed to report 90% of possible dangerous medical providers to the government. Dan Caldwell of Concerned Veterans for America chimed in with his thoughts on the matter.
A stunning new report shows that the VA is still failing America's heroes, revealing the department failed to report 90% of potentially dangerous medical providers. So how did this happen? Why isn't this being fixed? Joining me now is Dan Caldwell with Concerned Veterans for America. Thank you very much for joining us this morning, Dan. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on this morning.
So were you surprised by this finding?
No, absolutely not. This Government Accountability Office report just verifies reporting done by USA Today. This was going on for years up until earlier this year, until the VA took action to stop it. But this is something that was happening in large part because it was difficult to fire bad VA employees, including clinicians, doctors, nurses, etc. And this was part of a deal to get them out of the VA, paying them off, and also include payoffs as well. And the result of this is it was not only causing problems at the VA, but it was threatening the civilian medical system as well,
yeah,
because a lot of these clinicians were leaving and then working in private sector hospitals.
So these findings were based on a sampling of five VA hospitals. Let's look at a segment of what they found. It says that the GAO found that from October 2013 through March 2017, the five selected VAMCs did not report most of the providers who should have been reported to the National Practitioner Data Bank or state licensing boards in accordance with VHA policy. So how do we fix it, Dan?
Well, I think the big thing that needs to happen is that the law that President Trump signed into law, the VA Accountability and Whistleblower Protection Act, that needs to be enforced. And President Trump's VA Secretary, Secretary Shulkin, is enforcing it. So you need to actually fire, not pay off, or allow these doctors to leave without being reported to medical boards and get them out of the medical system. And on top of that, just like President Trump campaigned on, you need to give veterans real choice so there's competition and the VA is forced not to engage in this practice so they can keep veterans in the system. And that's why you have legislation like the Representative Lamborn just introduced, the Veterans Empowerment Act, which mm-hmm. would give that choice. And again, this is something President Trump campaigned on. It was incredibly popular with veterans. He'd get cheers at every campaign stop from veterans when he talked about it. It's something that his VA secretary supports, and Congress really needs to step up here and pass legislation like the bill that Representative Lamborn just introduced.
So along with accountability, veterans need the health care choice. You're a veteran. How do you think President Trump is doing so far? I mean, this is what he was voted in to do.
I think that overall, this has been a real success story for the administration. I think that the VA, despite these continued problems, is on a better path. But to be clear, as this story shows, there's still a lot of work to be done. They are taking action, but the president and Secretary Shulkin can only do so much themselves. Congress really needs to step up here and pass real VA reform, in particular giving veterans more choice, because that's what they want and that's what they've earned.
Working with Congress, we're hearing that a lot these days.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it, and thank you for your service.
Reuters reports that Uhuru Kenyatta has been inaugurated as Kenya's president after a very contentious election.
All smiles in Nairobi's Kasarani Stadium as Kenya's president, Uhuru Kenyatta, is inaugurated.
I, Uhuru Kenyatta.
Outside, a different story. The schism between fans of Kenyatta and those who support his rival, Raila Odinga, has brought police onto the streets. Police even fired tear gas to control a crowd of Kenyatta supporters who had tried to rush into the stadium. But it's not only Kenyatta fans who are out today. Police also fired tear gas in neighborhoods 2 hours before the rally was due to start, an apparent attempt to prevent opposition supporters from gathering. Kenya's opposition was planning to hold a prayer meeting to remember the 70 people killed in Kenya's extended election period. But witnesses said the rally point was sealed off by police. Kenyatta's route to his second term has been a long one. The Supreme Court nullified an election in August over irregularities. Odinga boycotted the second election, saying it would not be free and fair. Without his main rival to stand against, Kenyatta won the second election with 98% of the vote. But the low 35% turnout meant that victory was still not decisive. That doesn't matter to the 60,000 jubilant Kenyatta supporters who have packed his inauguration. They want Odinga supporters to engage in talks with the government and move on. For Odinga supporters, such talk of unity is tantamount to surrender. They accuse the ruling Jubilee Party of stealing the election, rampant corruption, directing abuse by security forces, and of neglecting vast swathes of the country. Fire! Setting the stage for Kenyatta's inauguration to be a day when Kenya's political fractures further widen.
In this Celestial Musings, the impending royal wedding is all over the news. And frankly, it's nice to see a happy story grabbing the headlines for a change. TMZ reports that today it was announced that the wedding will take place in May at St. George's Chapel at Windsor Castle. Prince Harry and Meghan Markle sat down for a televised interview yesterday evening with the BBC's Michelle Hussein, giving the dish on their relationship and Harry's proposal.
It happened a few weeks ago. earlier this month here at our cottage. Just a standard, typical night
for
us.
It's a cozy night. What were we doing? Just roasting chicken and having...
Trying to roast the chicken.
And it was just an amazing surprise. It was so sweet and natural and very romantic. He got on one knee.
Of course.
Was it an instant yes from you?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I could barely let you finish proposing. I said, can I say yes now?
She didn't even let me finish. She said, can I say yes, can I say yes now? And then there was hugs, and I had the ring in my finger. And I was like, can I give you the ring? She goes, oh, yes, the ring. So, no, it was a really nice moment. It was just the two of us, and I think I managed to catch her by surprise as well. So.
Yeah.
And this is how long after you first met?
Oh, it would be a year and a half, a little bit more than that.
No, just about a year and a half, yeah.
Which for most people would be quite a whirlwind. Is that how it's felt to you?
I don't think that I would call it a whirlwind in terms of our relationship. Obviously, there have been layers attached to how public it has become. After we had a good 5-6 months almost with just privacy, which was amazing. But no, I think we were able to really have so much time just to connect, and we never went longer than 2 weeks without seeing each other, even though we were obviously doing a long distance relationship. So it's we made it work.
We first met, we were introduced actually by a mutual friend who
we should protect our privacy and not
our privacy,
reveal
yeah.
too much of that.
And but it was literally, it was through her, and then we met once and then twice back to back, two dates in London. Last July,
yes,
beginning of July, and then it was, I think, about 3, maybe 4 weeks later that I managed to persuade her to come and join me in Botswana, and we camped out with each other under the stars. We spent, she came and joined me for 5 days out there, which was absolutely fantastic. So then we were really by ourselves, which was crucial to me to make sure that we had a chance to get to know each other.
One particular segment of this interview caught my attention.
But do you have that sense of responsibility, Prince Harry, for what you're asking Meghan to do?
Of course, that sense of responsibility was essentially from day one, or maybe a couple of months in, when I suddenly realised actually this is, you know, I know that I'm in love with this girl, and I hope that she's in love with me. But we still had to sit down on the sofa, and I still had to have some pretty, you know, frank conversations with her to say, look, you know, what you're letting yourself in for is, it's a big deal, and it's not easy for anybody. But I know that, you know, at the end of the day, she chooses me, and I choose her. And therefore, you know, whatever we have to tackle together or individually will always be us together as a team. So I think she's capable
of... That's so nicely said, isn't it?
I don't know. She's capable of anything. And together, as I said, there's a hell of a lot of stuff and work that needs doing. At the moment, for us, it's going to be making sure that our relationship is always put first. But look, both of us have passions for wanting to make change for good, and you know, with lots of young people running around the Commonwealth, that's where we're going to spend most of our time, hopefully.
And it was really one of the first things we connected on. It was one of the first things we started talking about when we met, was just the different things that we wanted to do in the world and how passionate we were about seeing change. I think that was that's what got date two in the books, probably.
That's true. Plenty to talk about.
Children?
Not currently, no. No, of course, you know, I think, you know, one step at a time, and hopefully we'll start a family in the near future.
Have you met each other's families, I imagine?
Yes, his family's been so welcoming, and...
You've met quite a few of them, actually.
I have, on both sides of his family, his mom's side as well, which has been really important to me, too. But, yes, the family has been great, and over the past year and a half, we've just had really nice time getting to know them and progressively helping me feel a part of not just the institution, but also part of the family, which has been really, really special.
Trying to track them down and make sure that they're around at the same time that she's popping in without telling too many people. And we've actually done incredibly well to make sure that you've met all the key people.
So does that mean a lot of the time that you've been together in this last year and a half, you've been at home a lot?
Yes. No, we had to sort of reverse the whole process, and cozy nights in front of the television, cooking dinner with just the two of us by ourselves in our little cottage, rather than going out for dinner and being seen in public. So we reversed the whole process, which is it's provided different opportunities and it's made us a hell of a lot closer in a shorter space of time.
That's
without question. So, you know, if anybody else at home is listening, then maybe, you know, slow down on the dates and maybe spend more time at home. But it's for us, it's an opportunity to really get to know each other without other people, looking or trying to take photos on their phones and all that kind of stuff. You know, with that comes with the job, comes with the role. But possible.
Yeah. And we were able to really get to know each other that way, but also then to go and have friends over for dinner or to go to his family's tea or any of those sort of things. And even, you know, just to take the time to be able to go on long country walks and talk.
We've been all over the place.
Okay, I enjoyed listening to this interview. I think that these two understand that they are entering into a real marriage, not a show. They understand that the foundations of a successful marriage are found not in appearances, not in what happens in the public eye, but in the quiet moments behind closed doors. They understand that although you marry one person, you marry into a family, into a whole other social circle, and that it is important that there are good relations between those who love you and the person that you're committing to for life. They spend a good amount of time talking about their desire to engage in charity work for the country's youth, and they even expressed a desire to start a family, quote, in the near future. That to me is a sign that these two, while obviously and for good reason spending their time focusing upon themselves and their relationship, are actually pretty outward-focused people who realize that their purpose is to give. They also seem to realize in their statement that they wish to start a family in the near future that the primary ends of their marriage isn't what they will get out of it, but what they will give. And they acknowledge that they give as a team, as one. So I'm going to say with reservations, I liked hearing how their relationship developed, quietly and privately, that they started off not with dates and flashy nights out, but with tranquil evenings, doing real-life things, like cooking, getting to know each other. No, I don't think that young people should run off on African campouts after two dates. But I also acknowledge that there is no getting out of the limelight for this man. He couldn't even serve his country in the military in wartime without being exposed. His unique situation required a certain amount of seclusion in order to properly be able to spend time getting to know this young lady without distraction. And I think that speaks to his seriousness about her and what sort of groundwork he wants to lay for his marriage. Should they have had separate tents? Yes, absolutely. That goes without saying. And no, of course they shouldn't be cohabitating. But I will say this. These two understand first that in order to have a successful marriage, they had to cut through the fakery of the dating scene and access what was authentic about the other. She looked for a nice guy. He looked for someone who was other-focused and could get to know him on his terms. They also understood that their marriage is not for their benefit, although of course they will benefit. They understand that their marriage is for the benefit of their children, their family, and the greater society. I think sometimes the relationships which yield the best marriages have less than ideal beginnings. Sometimes certain values do not come into play for some people until they have children to raise themselves. Ask me how I know. In fact, I don't think my husband and I went on a date until after we were married. As for Prince Harry and Miss Markle, I have high hopes for them, and I wish them a happy, holy marriage. Send me your news tips at news@veritasradionetwork.com. Keep yourself tuned in to the Veritas Radio Network for King Size Truth from Radio Size Speakers. Coming up next, The True Money Show. Celeste Youngblood signing off for the Crusade Channel. Serving you, serving truth.
You've just heard Crusade Channel News. Live on your news, talk, and saints leader, The Crusade Channel. And did you know that all newscasts are available as podcasts on CrusadeChannel.com and on our free app available in the Google Play and iTunes stores? Surprised?
If I woke up tomorrow with my head sewn to the carpet, I wouldn't be more surprised than I am right now.
Crusade Channel News. News you can trust. Because the truth can be trusted.